Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. Your hosts are Michael McNamara and me, Ryan Schwan. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the show. I will remind you that Michael McNamara called it in the last podcast, saying that we were going to go one and two. So everybody send hate mail to Michael McNamara right now. Hate him. Tell him to make some good calls for us.
Well, I could only predict the future. I can't change it. But right. I think we'll be getting
paradoxes.
Yeah, it's a three-game winning streak followed by a two-game losing streak, and seems like our mood is dependent on what's the most recent. But can we try to go back to the way we felt during the three-game winning streak? Can we go back to Ish Smith being a potential All-Star? Is there any way that we could just see these two games as a blip, or are we back to being depressed and thinking about tanking?
Now, what I prefer to do is forget about everything that happened before the three-game winning streak, okay? And think that the team that we've seen these five games is our team. And that means that we're going to win three out of every five games. And just so I don't blow up anybody's head who's trying to walk on a treadmill, if they continue this pace, if they win three out of every five games from now on through the rest of the season, the Pelicans will end up with 43 or 44 wins. If that happens, are they in the playoffs, Michael?
I mean, I'll continue to say that 42 wins gets them in. I'm still not that impressed with the West, especially a West that's pretty much been healthy. I mean, Houston looks terrible again tonight, so yeah, it'll be 42 wins, but I don't know about you. I mean, is your focus just dead set on playoffs, or are you more focused these next 65 games or so, assuming that we're going to be relatively healthy and Tyreek and Cole come back this week and Coupon's not far behind? Are you just going to be playoffs, 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 tunnel vision, blinders on, or are you more focused and curious on what this team is as currently constructed?
Well, I'm definitely curious as to what this team is as constructed, because that will feed into how many of these guys are here next year. But I am 100% playoffs or bust. This team needs to make the frickin' playoffs. And not only do they need to make the playoffs, they have to get the seventh seed. Screw those guys. They need to work, get the seventh seed, because we so we don't go down in flames in the first round in a complete blowout in four games. Because that's going to suck again. Let's get the seventh seed and go against the San Antonio Spurs, surprise them, get to the second round, fight our way through the second round against whatever team, I don't know, say the Utah Jazz, because they're in six right now. Or maybe the Clippers. Oh, Clippers. Oh. Anyways, my fantasy was great here. So Utah Jazz, we defeat the Utah Jazz because the Jazz suck. I hate the Jazz. And then we'll be in the Western Conference Finals with the Golden State Warriors.
All right. I mean, and what if that doesn't happen? What if they just play good and at the end of the season don't make the playoffs? Then is everything just lost and purposeless and pointless? And
oh, no, because it'll be very clear at that point that certain people need to go, and hopefully somebody will make them go.
Okay.
The one thing that that worries me the most, early on, stupid to start worrying about this, and I've seen other people mention it, but are you worried about what Ryan Anderson's asking price is going to be next year? If he plays like this through the whole year, which we would want to keep that guy, are you worried what his asking price will be now, or do you not think that matters because of the cap going way up?
What do you mean by plays like this? Because last week he was amazing, and this week he was terrible might be too nice of a word. So what do you mean?
You weren't impressed with 1 of 9?
No, and I mean honestly, anybody who's halfway decent and enters the offseason healthy and under the age of 34 is going to get paid a salary that people are going to say that's crazy. Because they're going to still be looking at it at old terms, but I don't know. This is kind of sad, but I totally get it. That 65 games left in the season, and we're talking about pending free agents and possible draft position and playoffs, or people get fired. I mean, I get it, but on the other hand, it's sad. This leads into part of what I think might be a focus this week is it seems like to me that because of the Ashik signing and re-signing Ajinsa, yada, 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 we're going to be in a position again this summer where the most value that we could get out of the offseason will just be re-signing our own guys. I mean, would you trade Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, let's say Dante Cunningham and Alexei Ajinsa for Nick Batum? All four of those guys for Nick Batum, yeah.
Say them again.
Ryan Anderson, Eric Gordon, Dante Cunningham, Alexei Ajinsa. All four of them for Nick Batum on a max contract, which will be something like 4 years.
No, not a chance.
Right.
I thought you meant this season to like clear room for the offseason.
No.
But no, not a chance.
And that's what I'm saying is, you know, people are going to say, well, we could just let all these guys walk. I don't want to pay Ryan Anderson X money, Y money, whatever.
It'll be the Monroe conversation.
Yeah, but you'll let all those people walk, and you'll probably have to release a couple more or unload a couple more just to be able to offer a max contract for a player like Batum or Parsons coming off of an injury. I mean, honestly, if you don't get Kevin Durant, which, you know, I never said was likely, I said was possible, but everything had to go right this season, and it definitely hasn't. If you don't get Kevin Durant in the offseason, you're not going to get, you know, as much value as you could get just by re-signing your own guys. And I just, you know, that to me, that was the bigger fear and takeaway with the Ashik contract is now we're so close relatively to the to where the cap's going to be that it's not like we could just let one of those guys go, sign the other one, and then also get a good player. We're just going to be in a position again next year where, you know, we're going to say, well, Ryan Anderson or Eric Gordon, they're not perfect fits for this team, just like we did with Ashik and Ajinsa. But we can't just lose him for nothing, so let's re-sign him again. And I just it feels like it's very likely that it's going to be the same thing repeating itself. And I don't really understand or see a clear path for how this roster gets significantly better. So, if
too early to say that.
If
too early.
Well, I mean, anything's possible, but the high likelihood. I mean, who in this free agent class moves the needle other than Durant and Al Horford?
Yeah, I don't necessarily mean that it's going to be a free agent-based thing, but I think it's too early to say that there isn't a way for this team to improve, because there are always trades out there.
No.
I mean, Houston is bound to have to do something, right?
Who would you want from them that'll make you better?
Dwight Howard?
Oh, he's going to move the needle for this team?
You don't think so?
No, he's not moving the needle for his own team on a team that has guards that create. So, I don't know. I mean, we're getting way too far ahead of ourselves. I just think the overwhelming likelihood is that this team is in a position where I don't see a clear path for significant roster improvement. So you better hope that the guys here start to click and start playing better, which is possible. This, you know, Eric Gordon is struggling. He's averaging close to 18 points a game, so it might look that way on the surface, but he's just missing tons of open three-pointers. But he did that last year, and, you know, sometimes shooters take a while into the season to get their rhythm, and I mean, it's still possible. It's still possible that once Jrue Holiday gets off restriction and stops playing, you know, scared, that he could take off, that Tyreek opens a lot of things for other people. It's still possible that this roster has a lot of the ingredients to be, you know, a very good team. But, you know, as we go more and more games, the sample size is building up, and, you know, Eric Gordon's missing wide-open threes. Omer Sheik's having the worst season of his career. Jrue Holiday is looking like not just an average offensive player anymore, but a bad one. I mean, it's starting to pile up as we get further into the season. And I hope it turns around, but, you know, that's just hope at this point. All the evidence that we have right now is that, you know, we have one guy in Anthony Davis that's starting to play like a superstar, and then on any given day, there's really not a second guy you know you could rely on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gotten pretty bad. And, you know, in the last game against our good buddies, the Utah Jazz, who, by the way, I said they suck, even though they kicked our butts, so I probably should shut up. It was pointed out by Gavelt in our comments on the Bourbon Street Shots website that Anthony Davis played 44 minutes in that game and posted a +1. So our team outscored the other team by 1 point when he was on the floor, but the team lost by 14, which means that the rest of the crew in the 4 minutes that Anthony Davis was sitting and getting a rest, the whopping 4 minutes, they managed to be outscored by 15 points. How's that even possible? Like 15 minutes and four, I mean, 15 points in 4 minutes. It's not like we're playing the Utah Jazz. We're not playing Golden State. Utah Jazz.
Yeah, and I mean, same with Ashiq. Ashiq only played 8 minutes, but in all the minutes he didn't play, we were actually positive against Utah, and we're -16 with Ashiq on the court. And I mean, I don't know. I you know, I'm trying to think of these players and who they are and what they should be. And I get asked all the time, like, if our second banana's on this team, or if not, who could we get? I start to wonder sometimes if we have a player that's capable of being the third best player on a championship team, let alone, I mean, forget second, but, I mean, you look at the third best player on the championship contenders right now, you're talking about Klay Thompson, Serge Ibaka, Kevin Love. Would any of those teams trade us that guy for anybody on our team not named Anthony Davis?
Not a chance, of course.
So, I mean, do we even
like
have
San Antonio, who is it? Tim Duncan?
Which, I mean, in a vacuum in a given game, I mean, Tim Duncan doesn't pull a Ryan Anderson. When do you see Tim Duncan ever go 1-for-9?
Yeah.
And then play terrible defense? I mean, so, yeah, in a given game, of course you would take Tim Duncan over Ryan Anderson, over Eric Gordon over, I mean, you talked about how Tony Parker's losing it. The way Drew Holiday is playing right now, I mean, we can make excuses for him and maybe they're all legitimate, but if we just evaluate the player, I don't know what we're watching or you know, what we're supposed to say that's positive about. I still love the way he gets over picks and screens and really fights on the defensive end. I don't think that's gone down. I know people look at the box scores and see guards lighting it up against us. I still think as an individual man-to-man defender, he's as good as he's ever been. But offensively, I haven't looked at every guard across the NBA, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's one of the bottom 10 starting guards in the NBA when you just talk about pure offense this year.
Yeah, so you just walked into my ambush.
Uh-oh.
Which is, choose which is the most disappointing thing about the New Orleans Pelicans this year. Okay?
Ugh.
So you get to pick, but I'm going to give you four choices of really wonderful, exciting things to be disappointed about. Because this is a fun game, okay? So the number one on my list I had was Drew Holiday, because we spent how much of the offseason talking about how Drew Holiday was the second banana Anthony Davis, how amazing he's going to be. We are all, if he could stay healthy, how great he is. So first exhibit, Drew Holiday and what he's done this season. Second exhibit, Omer Asik. And the fact that he's not even averaging 2 points a game and barely more than 4 rebounds a game. That stands on its own. Three, the offense that we are seeing when Alvin Gentry was supposed to be coming in as an offensive coach and going to unleash this team. Or finally, fourth, the Darren Erman basically taking the 25th ranked defense and making the 29th ranked defense.
I mean, I could quickly eliminate 3 and 4 because honestly, those aren't things that bother me. I forgot who put it out there, but there was the website or whatever that tracks the ball movement, the player movement, yada, yada, yada. And all that is substantially better than it was last year. And we're still getting the same number or slightly better looks at the basket, and so offensively I think it's a large product of just the lack of talent, and then having two inconsistent shooters in Gordon and Ryan Anderson, who when you have your full talent you don't have to rely on as much. So I'm not really that worried about the offense. I think that picks up, you know, Erman's defense. I think we could say that we've seen progress outside of this Clippers game. I mean, I still think that we've seen significant progress over the games that really still sink this defensive rating against, you know, the two Golden State games, the Portland game, et cetera. So I'm not as worried about that. The Drew thing, I could talk myself into, okay, give it time, let him come off restriction, let Tyree come back. Maybe this team pushes a little more. In worst case scenario, you know, as callous as it is to say, he's an expiring contract next year. The biggest disappointment for me is the Asik deal, and I could even lump Ajinsa into that. The fact that they've just got, you know, these $14, $15 million a year sitting on their books, and they can't find a spot to play these guys in. And then when they do, they're just massively disappointing. I mean, the Phoenix game started with a dunk from Omer Asik by himself, and he missed it. He missed a wide open. There was nobody around him. Phoenix had conceded it. He got the, and just wide open dunk, clang. He hung his head like he always did, moped back. I think he went 0 for 2 from the line in that game. So he basically, he missed a dunk and two free throws that are called free throws for a reason. Moped around, went and sat on the bench, and, you know, now he's down to 10, 12 minutes a game on a good night. Ajinsa usually doesn't play. So to be paying you know, close to $15 million a year for two guys who you probably only put out there because of their salaries, and then when you do, they're terrible, and they can't play anymore, and now you have them for 4 years, I can't imagine anything being more disappointing than that. Did I get it right? Did I win?
Yeah. You absolutely won. Actually, for me, Drew Holiday is the most disappointing thing so far. And you're right. Yeah, I can still talk myself into, oh, he'll bounce back. But holy crap, dude. Like the Utah Jazz game, we'll just grab that one because it was 14 minutes, 0-4, 0-1 from 3, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, 4 turnovers, 2 points. That's just abysmal.
Again, it's really bad. I mean, it's not like he was playing anybody good either.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, how does he not just absolutely destroy Raul Neto or Rodney Hood or Trey Burke? Like, he should be able to... the only guy on that team who should even be able to physically even moderately compete with him is Alec Burks. Like, there isn't anybody else on the Jazz team who can mess with Drew Holiday. Like... incomprehensible.
Yeah, like, we've already discussed that Ish Smith, you know, overall this season has been better, and I don't think Ish Smith has been that good. I think he's had 4 or 5 good games that prop up some of his stats, but I wouldn't call Ish Smith good this year by any means. But he's definitely been better than Drew. But, like, even some of the minimum guys that we were chasing, that we were just like, oh, this would be a nice 5th or 6th guard, Mo Williams. Mo Williams is 10 times better than Drew Holiday this season so far. Even Jason Terry, who we kind of laughed at, and he's 39 years old or whatever. Yeah, sure, bring him for vet leadership. Jason Terry's running circles around Drew Holiday. I don't get it, and I don't know if it's all going to be cured by taking the restriction off or Tyreek. I mean, like, there's little things that bother me. Anthony Davis obviously had that putback to win the Phoenix game, but watching, and maybe this is just the coach in me or whatever, it bothered me so much that Drew Holiday missed that shot for Anthony Davis to clean up. First of all, it was a layup that didn't even hit the rim. And secondly, he was driving right, and he went up for the layup with his left hand, which basically brought the ball closer to the defender. It's his offhand, whatever, but then he misses a layup without even hitting the rim. Like, I don't know. We watch a lot of games, Pelicans games, and even games they're not involved with. I just don't see other guards that, you know, are just as inept as he's been on the offensive end. And I agree it concerns me, but I think there's a possibility he pops out of it, and at worst, his contract isn't on the books for the next couple of years. Tell me the fairy tale. Give me the scenario. Give me the future in which that's somewhat realistic, in which we look back 5 months from now and go, oh, yeah, I do remember when Ashiq was barely getting any minutes and looked terrible. Yeah, that was an aberration. He really turned it around because of this, this, and this. Tell me the scenario in which that happens.
It'll have to involve an injury. Like, he's not going to get the opportunities at this point. He's lost his opportunities. So it's going to involve either someone, like, flat out getting hurt, Ryan Anderson or Davis, and he gets minutes, or, like, this Memphis game, and suddenly because he's playing against big guys and they decide they wanted to roll him out against big guys, and not does what – and, again – this is a fantasy because what Alvin Gentry likes to do is go small and make them take their guys off the court who are big. Like, that's what he purposely does. So why would he suddenly just say, oh, let's keep Ashiq in there? But let's say he does and Ashiq plays well, and then maybe earns a little bit of trust back against other big guys, and he has a couple more games against big guys where he plays pretty well, and so they insert him for a few more minutes, and he creeps back up to 20 minutes game. That's about it. That's best I can give you, 20 minutes.
And, I mean, have you seen anything in the minutes he's in where it looks like either offensively or defensively he could greatly impact the game in the systems that we're running?
That's actually true. Yes, actually I can. And I felt really bad for him a couple of these games when I watched because it felt like every time I would notice he did something really well. And, again, casual fans are probably thinking I'm a moron, because you watch those games, and when I say doing something really well, like he sets like a monster screen on someone to set someone free, or he boxes out a dude and wrestles him way out away from the basket so one of our guards can swoop in and get the rebounds. Like, the things I'm looking for him to do well are those like little down and dirty plays, just watch him off the ball, see what he does to people and how he can affect things. But it felt like every single time I said, oh, I liked what Ashik did there, he would run down to the offensive end and do something awful. And off, not only awful, but awful in your face. Like, there's no way you can miss the fact that he screwed this up. And like, he gets a gets a nice offensive rebound and then like dribbles the ball off his foot out of bounds, or lowers it below his waist so that the other guards from the other team can steal it and run away with it. Like, he always does something to counter his good moments, and maybe he'll stop doing those. Like, I don't know. Like, how often can he miss that dunk? Really? Like, that dunk was so uncontested, it was ridiculous.
Well, he got one in the next game, I believe it was, and he finished it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the other one that I'm curious about what you think is, Graham McQueen did a good piece on our site about Eric Gordon and some of the wide-open looks that this system is getting him. But, I mean, he's not knocking them down. As a catch-and-shoot guy this year from three, he's only at about 33%. He was right around 48% last year. This year he's actually getting 7 three-pointers per game that are considered either open or wide open by NBA.com stats, and he's only hitting a little over 35% of them. I mean, was last year the aberration, and he really just is a 35, 36, 37% three-point shooter even when open, or is he a couple weeks, couple months to get the feel, and he's going to go on a stretch like we saw last year where he's hitting all his catch-and-shoot threes? What do you think is more likely?
I think last year was probably a little bit of a fluke year, but I do think that he is better than what we're seeing. And I also say that the kinds of shots he's getting right now, or he's taking, I should even say, right now, are actually a little different than what he was taking last year. Like, there's a lot of, they're just throwing it to him as a release valve, and he's been obviously given the green light, so if he feels he can get the shot off, he just takes it. And sometimes he might be wide open, but he's like 3 or 4 feet behind the line, and he's just jacking because he can. And if you put Tariq Evans in there and you put Norris Cole in there, I feel like he will be a little closer to the line. He will, to keep the spacing properly, he'll be able to take shots that are probably a little bit better. And, you know, there's different quality open shots, because an open shot 3 feet behind the line is obviously not as good as an open shot when he's on the line. Not literally on the line, but right behind it. But, I mean, I also believe it's possible that he had a fluke year last year. I remember when Peja had the amazing year, that was technically a fluke year for him. If you go and look at all of his shooting percentage before that, he was usually a 38, 39, sometimes 40% shooter. And that year, Chris Paul feeding him, he was like 45% from downtown. And those spikes happen sometimes. So I wouldn't be surprised if that was what happened last year with Gordon. And he's more of a 39, 40% shooter.
Yeah, and then the last guy I was just curious to know about, I mean, if we would have done a podcast after our first game this week, we might have been talking. I mean, there was people, non-Pelicans fans, but writers, you know, national writers on Twitter, talking about Ish Smith as most improved player. Like, there was actual conversation about it. After that Phoenix game where, you know, he played... I don't know if he played great. He produced great. Some of those shots he hit in the fourth quarter, I know,
insane.
Yeah, I know you were right alongside me saying, no, don't take that. And then he had the three-point buzzer beater. I mean, between his 2 three-pointers and then 2 of the shots I specifically remember in the fourth quarter, he would probably be expected to net 3 or 4 points off those 4 shots. And he netted 10. I mean, he sank both his threes, and he hit 2 insane shots in the fourth quarter. So I won't say he played well. I'll say he produced well. But then in the, you know, the last two games, we've seen him playing a little wild, out of control. You know, and the stats, specifically the field goal percentage, has come way back down to earth. What are you feeling? Checking in on your weekly, how you feel about Ish.
So, I think he's a perfectly fine fifth guard on a team. And he is a guy that if you need energy, if you, like there, I would love to see him be in the kind of role where you're just in the, like, say you're the Clippers, and that team every once in a while just goes through doldrums where there's nobody on that team who's going to play super hard except for Chris Paul, who sometimes he takes hats off. We've seen that, like, there are days where that team is a veteran team and they don't have any energy. And if you could grab Ish Smith and throw him out there from one of those nights for 24 minutes for your team, that'd be great. But most nights keep him to 12. And I think that's kind of where I am with him, and that'd be fine for this team too. Like, I wouldn't be ecstatic if he was our fourth guard. I wouldn't be happy if he was our fourth guard. I'd be, all right, he's our fourth guard. That's not great. But if he's a fifth guard, he would be an elite fifth big or a fifth small. Elite fifth small is what he is.
And then just the last thing that jumped out to me is, especially when this team is missing shots at the rate it was these last two games, you can't help but look. But last year, this team was fourth in the NBA in offensive rebound percentage. I mean, they have elite offensive rebounders in Davis, Anderson, and Omir, so you'd think that that's obviously going to be a strength of this team. This year, they are dead last in offensive rebound percentage. I mean, there's numerous reasons for it, but even if Gentry's philosophy is to stop some transition offense and blah, blah, did you think it was possible with this roster that we have to possibly be last in the NBA in offensive rebound percentage?
No, I did not think that at the beginning of the season, but after watching the team play, and you bring this up now, I actually thought about it like a week ago, like why are we getting so few offensive rebounds? So I kind of started watching. When the shot goes up, who's tasked the most often to go crash the glass? And it's the power forward, and that's it. Whoever's playing the four, it's their job to crash the offensive glass, and that's it. Which means Ryan Anderson, half the time, he's out of the three-point line taking the shot. So he doesn't even try on those. So already you've eliminated a good, one-tenth of the shots. We have nobody crashing the offensive glass. And only rarely does anybody else, like Ish Smith, grab an offensive rebound, and that's usually because that person drove, missed a shot, and they pick up their own shot and put it in because they're still around the basket because they stumbled or whatever. But nobody else. This feels like a pure, you know, San Antonio or the Boston Celtics with Kevin Garnett. Those teams just said, we concede the offensive glass and ran back on defense. They felt that was more important. It feels like that's what they've done. But if you told me that was what's going to happen at the beginning of the season, I would have been pretty surprised.
So,
but then Ashik's not there. That's another part of it. Like, if he's not on the court, he can't offensive rebound, and there's nobody else who's a good rebounder other than Davis at times.
Oh, Ryan Anderson. But, yeah. So here's the question then. Tyreek Evans likely to come back this week. You know, we all know about the Kobe assist by now. I think in his piece and that one he released before the season, he said that Tyreek only converts 51% of his shots at the rim, but the Pelicans either scored or at least got an offensive rebound, whatever, on 75% of the shots that Tyreek took at the rim. So it was obviously a guy who drew a lot of attention, and we got the offensive rebound and made good things happen as a result. Do you think that they stick with the philosophy that they have, or with Tyreek coming back, do you expect not only for them to just luck into a couple offensive rebounds, but maybe them change their strategy as well?
I actually think that they'll probably continue to do their strategy now, but we're still going to inevitably see upticks in the offensive rebounding, because the reason why Tyreek Evans causes those offensive rebounds is he draws one of the big men, or sometimes both of the big men, as he goes to the basket, which is going to leave that one power forward who is tasked with the job of getting offensive rebounds. They're clearly not going to be taking as many shots when Tyreek Evans is on the floor, because Evans is going to take those. They're going to be free to crash the offensive boards, and we'll see more offensive boards in that situation. I don't think we'll be able to reach what we saw last year, because we'll have centers that are basically their job, in this case most times could be Anthony Davis. Sometimes Ryan Anderson's been playing center on some of our positions. They will be out on the perimeter clearing that space for Evans. So we'll see some more, but we won't see a ton more. That's at least my take. Do you think they're going to change their strategy?
I don't know. I mean, I wonder if they might even get more conservative with it, because if Tyreek is crashing, that's one less person getting back in training. So, I mean, how are you going to send two big men after the board and just leave, what, Eric Gordon and Quincy Pondexter to fend for themselves if we don't get the rebound? So, I don't know. I mean, right now they have the guards back on transition defense. Tyreek driving to the basket just brings another guard 94 feet away from playing defense. So I could see them staying with the same strategy or being even more conservative. And I don't think if they stay with the same strategy, the offensive rebounds will go up that much, because you're right, that big will go to Tyreek. But it's just the same thing that we're seeing all these teams doing, is they'll send the help to the ball, but they always squeeze somebody from the weak side onto Anthony Davis. I mean, we never see him get open rim runs or things like that, because, yeah, two people will go to the ball, but somebody on the weak side will just come and squeeze Anthony Davis from behind. So they're never leaving him open or him around the rim to be able to do things. What they're doing is just leaving our shooters, and they're really not making them pay. I mean, we've already talked about how many open shots Gordon is missing. Alonzo Gee obviously isn't going to hit anything. Ish Smith, you'll live with that. Drew Holiday's not been playing well. So I think it's all going to start when this, if and when this offense ever clicks, it's going to be when those shooters get going. But I don't know if I'm going to expect, I mean, Drew Holiday shooting 30% from three. Babbitt, who was almost 50%, is shooting 35%. Same with Eric Gordon. I don't think things are really going to open up until they start hitting. And I don't think Tyreek is going to get them more open shots than they've already had. They're getting plenty of open shots. So all these guys could return and all that could be great. I don't think that we see the wins start piling up until these guys start hitting the shots that they're frankly missing right now, because teams are just going to squeeze everything in the paint and make us beat them from out there, which we clearly can't most of the time this year.
Let's put it out there though, like regression to the mean. If that happens to this team, our three-point shooting can't do anything but go up, right? Like, who on this team is shooting?
Yeah.
Well, right, but who on this team is shooting better than you expected from deep?
I mean, Dante Cunningham, but yeah, that's it.
He's at 32%. So
right, but I didn't
expect like 26 or something.
I didn't expect him to make 9 3. What does he have coming in? Isn't his career like 4 threes in his entire career before? So. Yeah, I mean, I expected him to be closer to where Gee is. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, nobody's really Ryan Anderson had 1 week, but...
And he's at 38% for the season, which is about his career average. So I don't. He should stay there.
Yeah.
I
asked this on a couple podcasts already. Maybe we just don't have good offensive players. Maybe they're just not good. I mean, that's possible, and at what point...
But how do you generate a top 10 offense last year with no good offensive players?
Oh, I mean, outside of Davis. I mean, obviously Davis was good. Tyreek just causing so much chaos. as you've said before, a once-in-a-generation season from Anthony Davis that's hard to duplicate. I mean, Cole and Quincy Pondexter playing out of their mind for half of a season or a quarter of a season in Cole's case. I mean, Eric Gordon, an absolute aberration, just an amazing three-point percentage that he's been nothing like. I mean, like I said, maybe Gordon was an aberration, and maybe, you know, Cole and Pondexter were as well. I don't know. I know I watch other teams, and I'm scared of their guards. There's nobody on this team if I was an objective observer or a fan of another team where I would say that I was scared of any of their players other than Anthony Davis and Ryan Anderson. And Ryan Anderson is just the definition of a streaky guy. So on the nights when he's off, like, where do you go to get an easy bucket? If you needed an easy bucket, if I said, Brian, I need you to guarantee me 2 points on this possession right now, tell me what you would go to with our players. Because I honestly don't know, so I'm honestly asking. What would you go to if you needed 2 points on this possession?
Anthony Davis, Ish Smith, pick and roll.
And then, so the pick and roll... this team decides to trap. They put two long guys in front of Ish so he can't see anything. The help defender comes over from the weak side onto Anthony Davis. Then what do you want them to do?
I hope he throws it to Eric Gordon. Gordon is on that time.
So you hope. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's nobody that you feel comfortable with that's a guy that's going to show up on any given night other than Anthony Davis. The rest, it's a crapshoot right now.
Yep. Yep. All right, so this is a super depressing conversation. Was there anything in these particular games that we just saw that you wanted to bring up specifically? Like, did you want to talk about how Chris Paul is a douchebag?
Yeah, sure. I mean...
I'm gonna tell you something right now. I saw all the anger at Chris Paul, and I get why it's there. That is a standard play. Lots and lots of people play. Lots of people do that. It's not Chris Paul. Chris Paul does it a lot. I don't necessarily. If it's obvious that he ran into him, he should be called for an offensive foul in that situation. But many, many guards do the thing where they see a big man running nearby them, they try to cut them off so they can't get back on defense.
So that's not my big issue. So first of all, I don't think many do that. And I remember when I first saw Chris Paul do that, and it was so odd to me that I pretty much attribute him as at least this generation's person who started that trend.
Okay.
For better or worse, but no.
I remember Mark Jackson doing it a lot, but besides
that.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I didn't complain about it when he was here. You know, the thing that just bothers me is that, so when we traded Chris Paul, I knew that the Hornets at the time, I knew they were going to stink for a couple years, and I wanted so badly for my Clippers to be my second team, where I would just say, all right, when we're out of playoff contention, which will be soon, I'm going to root for the Clippers. I'm going to root for Chris Paul. I want to see that guy win a championship. I never really blamed him for what went on here. I mean, I think he signed that second contract with the best intention. Everything crumbled around him, and, you know, he wanted to leave. The one thing that I wish he would have done is accepted the trade to Golden State, because Steph Curry would be a Pelican right now, but
yeah,
whatever. He wanted to go to a bigger market, so okay, he goes to LA. But I hate that team. I'm so furious that I don't get to root for that guy anymore, and it just, you know,
But is it him or is it the rest of the team?
Well, I mean, he's soured as well, because
yeah.
I bet if you would have asked him when that trade happened, or even after that first year in LA, he would have said without a doubt he would have a championship by now. Or at least gotten to a finals, and he's obviously accomplished neither. And it's just,
he's more sour and more complainy, or it's annoying. So that's what really frustrates me. And then the other part that frustrates me with that, and then this whole conversation with Davis, is can you define when you hear that somebody says an NBA player is soft, what is the standard? What do people mean by that?
That they can be pushed around easily and they can be basically taken out of a game by somebody getting physical with them.
Or what about when it comes to injuries?
Well, people will say that somebody can be soft, like, injury-wise, yeah, like they sprain their ankle and they don't want to play anymore.
Right, so they
That's not how I usually hear soft, though. Soft, though, I usually think that somebody could just be pushed around and they're not going to fight back very hard.
Yeah, well, I mean, in this context, and it does have it, is, he's soft, he's, you know, he's a little banged up, but, you know, Russell Westbrook goes out there and plays with a mask on his face, and Anthony Davis bumps a knee, and all of a sudden he's out. So they're implying that he's soft or he can't play with pain or whatever. Do you have any inclination at all that is a possible part of Anthony Davis's makeup, that he's unwilling to play through pain?
Not being able to know what kind of pain he was actually in, but I will admit that there are times where I'm just kind of like, there are players who get these same sort of diagnoses that would be going through them. And there are players that won't, but you kind of want your superstar to be Mr. Tough Guy. Like, could you have seen Michael Jordan having his knee collide with another guy and him not wanting to come out and rip that guy's balls off and stuff them down their throat later in the game? Like, there is different levels of pain, and I think Anthony Davis may be on the lower end of it. But, you know, how many guys are out there who have had injuries to, what is it, 14 different parts of their body in a four-year career, not even 4 years?
Yeah, do you think that maybe subconsciously, let's say that this is true. Again, you and I can't possibly know. You know, a bruised left knee for Joe is not the same amount of pain as a bruised left knee for Tom. If people's bodies all feel so I get what you're saying, but I also think that people go, oh, it was a hip contusion? Michael Jordan would have played through a hip contusion. You have no idea what people's bodies feel and, you know, the level of but let's say that maybe you're right and maybe he doesn't play through the highest level at the highest level threshold of pain or whatever. Do you think that this might be at all an unnecessary or unintentional consequence of the first couple seasons where they kind of babied Anthony Davis, and anytime he wasn't feeling 100%, they would sit him down for the night because they weren't trying to win anyway? And maybe Davis isn't even conscious of it right now, but in that early year or two where he didn't learn to play through pain, where he was told, if you're feeling any pain, just sit down, you know, it's not worth it long term. Do you think that might be an unintentional consequence that came of that?
I think it is 100% possible that that's an unintentional consequence. I do want to say one thing. I don't care if he sits out these games because he's hurt a little bit or he's hurt a lot. If he feels like he's hurt and he shouldn't play, I'm not one of the people who's going to be saying, Anthony Davis, suck it up and get out there and play, because I think the number one thing we've seen is that players who play through injuries, they tend to get more and more injured. And, you know, Anthony Davis, if you don't feel like you should be playing, don't play. Like, I really feel that way. As long as we're 100% sure, and I am, that he's not doing the Baron Davis type injuries, which don't exist, but he says they exist, then yeah, if he feels like he shouldn't be playing, then he should be sitting on the sideline and making sure that he's going to be able to go in the next game or the game after that. Does it bother you? Like, when you see hip contusion and he's out for a couple games and you're kind of like, he barely touched the guy. Like, does that bother you? Are you in the second game? You're like, you suck, Anthony Davis. I wish you were tougher.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the diagnosis because, like, some people reported it as a hip contusion, then it was a hip strain. And, of course, you know, I'm on WebMD more than basketball reference with this team. And a hip strain usually says 10 to 14 days don't participate in activities like basketball. So, again, this is where I don't know and couldn't possibly tell you, you know, what it was and how big it is. To me, there is one reason, one piece of evidence that I could give that he is not kind of playing up injuries this year to sit, and that is because he still has to make an all-NBA team or start the All-Star game to get an extra $25 million. $25 million. Even if and none of this is true, but let's say he hated this team, hated the city, hated all of his teammates and was mad at all the moves and that Monty got fired. Even if you want to be the biggest hot take conspiracy theorist in the world, okay, fine, I'll grant you all that. But if he doesn't make the All-NBA team, he's out $25 million. There's no way he's going to play up stuff or sit games when you've got $25 million on the line, not this season. So I guess that's the number one reason I don't buy it even a little bit.
Sorry, I was actually muted for a second because I had forgotten that he had to make another I was looking up the rules around that, the Supermax contract. You're right. He's got to start an All-Star game or be an All-NBA player or MVP, which we know is not happening with Steph Curry being Steph Curry right now. So, wow, $25 million, that's a...
Right.
That's hard to... And there isn't any way for him to trigger it next year either. He's got to do it this year.
Right, so that's... I mean, that's why I deal with more conspiracy theorists and, you know, people I've just getting used to calling idiots now than almost any other person alive. And I hear all this stuff, and that's fine. I understand that people have venom and they want to unleash it and they're upset, but it just... the argument doesn't make any sense. I mean, even if you're calling the guy selfish, fine, then tell me why he's sacrificing $25 million potentially in order to be selfish. So, yeah, it's just that whole play with Chris Paul, like, you know, I'll be honest, I liked the play when it was here because it usually got us free throws or it... You know, I just thought it was a clever play. I remember him doing it his rookie year, and I was just like, I never really saw anybody do that. That's really clever, a clever way to control tempo on the fast break. But that play just, again, you know, watching Anthony Davis get carried off obviously got me worried, but then just, you know, I could see Anthony Davis being injury prone. Maybe that's possible, and that's who he is. But it just really bothers me when the he's soft narrative gets going again. So whatever, Chris.
I have one question for you from that Clippers game, and because I don't feel like this is at all new. I think we see this all the time. Overall, I know you are 100% behind the idea that Anthony Davis is a better basketball player than Blake Griffin, that you would rather have him, no questions asked. But is this a little bit of a Deron Williams, Chris Paul kind of situation, where there was anybody who knew anything about basketball understood 100% that Chris Paul was a better basketball than Deron Williams in the NBA over the course of a year? But when they went head-to-head, Deron Williams tended to eat up Chris Paul and make his life really hard. And Blake Griffin pushes Davis around all over the place. And he did it last year, and he did the year before. And Davis is now, like, you can't expect him to get a whole lot bigger than he is right now. Do you think that that's a little bit of that? Do you think that Blake Griffin is a bad matchup for Anthony Davis?
If they were, yeah, I mean, to me, if they're playing one-on-one, I think Blake, let's say 9 out of 10 times. If you're talking about both of them playing iso ball against, you know, against each other, going in the post against each other, I think Blake Griffin beats him. I think why we see such a big gap a lot of times in their stat lines is, I mean, you look at Blake Griffin in this game, literally every second he played, Chris Paul was on the court. They played the exact number of minutes and second. I mean, so, you know, he has that where Anthony Davis, we know, is a guy that is dependent on people getting him the ball, and he's probably the best finisher in the NBA in multiple ways, either if it's off the pick-and-pop jump shot, the alley-oop, you know, following on the offensive glass. Anthony Davis is a superior finisher to you know, than Blake Griffin when you talk about everything, but that requires, you know, a guard to get him the ball. I think if you flop Chris Paul and Drew Holiday, Anthony Davis has substantially better stats than Blake Griffin does. You know, although Blake will be able to create a bit on his own, so the gap will be a little closer than we see with Davis and Blake. But yeah, I think Blake is better at creating his own offense, and he also has the better facilitator, so that's why sometimes we see such a big gulf between the two. I think Davis needs to get, you know, a guard that could get him the ball, you know, in a similar fashion as Blake gets.
Okay. I was just wondering what you thought about that. Anything else about these games? Did you want to talk about anything particular in the Utah game that other than Drew Holiday sucking?
I mean, Drew Holiday, Eric Gordon, I mean...
Okay, everybody's sucking except for Anthony Davis?
I mean, that's just... It's really embarrassing. I mean, so what did those guys finish? Those guys finished 2-4-23. I'm talking about Eric Gordon, Drew Holiday, Omer Asik, and Ryan Anderson. All who get paid, by the way, more than Anthony Davis this season. That's just...
Yeah.
I mean, this is where I keep going back. I don't know who these players are. I mean, you look around the league, like, do we have a bunch of George Hills on our team? Like, where in the hierarchy are these four players? Just in general, like, are we talking about? I'm trying to think of a given team. You know, where are they as far as supporting players and role players? They're getting paid good money. They all have names because, you know, at least one point in their career, they had a fantastic season or two, but I don't even know where they are anymore in the NBA hierarchy. But that's just, I don't understand why when it rains, it pours with this team on both ends. I mean, why do they all have to play terrible in the same game? And then randomly we'll have another game where the Pelicans score 120 and, you know, all... You know, Drew Holiday, Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, Anthony Davis, and Ish Smith all had a great game just three games before this. And then when they're all terrible, they're terrible. To me, is it possible? The reason why I predicted 1-2 is because this team has still not shown me anything that impressive on the road. They, you know, they obviously got the win in Phoenix, and that was probably their best game. But I have not seen anything else impressive on the road from the team this season. Is it possible they're just a good home team and, you know, since these are all role players, they're just never really going to be good on the road?
Yeah, that shouldn't matter, though. Like, the actual real splits, if you look across the entire NBA, home court advantage, the actual benefit, like how players play compared from home games to away games, is actually decreasing and has decreased almost nothing. That is the most amazing thing. Like they posted the whole study of it in the middle of last season where they basically pointed out it used to be that home court advantage used to be worth at least 3 points a game, and now it's almost nothing. And player performance doesn't really change that much away and home. That can't be explained by some home cooking for the books, and that people like tend to get a couple more assists, like the old Chris Paul in New Orleans effect, where all of his away games, he averaged like 9 assists for it. All of his home games, he averaged like 12, which is just kind of weird because the shooting percentage wasn't any different for his team. So they had a whole thing about that. So why does our team does role players shouldn't just start sucking because they got on an airplane?
I mean, do you have...
And these guys shouldn't be role players. Drew Holiday shouldn't be a role player. He should be a good player.
Do any of our guys strike you as, outside of Ryan Anderson, as having unshakable confidence? I mean, don't you say... I mean, when I think of Eric Gordon, the first thing I think about is that whiny face. When I think of Omer Asik, the first thing I think about is the head slumped, running down the court. When, you know, Drew Holiday will miss something, and, you know, he really has no emotion one way or the other. Anthony Davis, we've seen already at the beginning of the season, gets in these funks. Like, who's our irrational confidence? I would say by far the most competent player on this team offensively is Ryan Anderson. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. I think Ryan Anderson is a rational confidence
and
guy.
And who's next?
Tyreek.
So maybe that changes
it. And Tyreek might be higher than Anderson. And then Norris Cole.
So maybe we get some of that back, some of the swagger back. I mean,
I don't know. Is that good, though? Irrational confidence, there's a reason why it's irrational.
I mean, with this team, though, just because, I mean, once it seems like, once the ball gets rolling downhill, I mean, how many games can you remember this year where the offense started off bad and then got good? It's very few. It just feels like when Eric Gordon starts off 0-5, you know how the night's ending.
It's true.
So, I don't know. You know, maybe that'll help. I think Pondexter will help with a lot of intangible things in and of itself, but I don't know. It's just, to me, I hesitate to say roster construction because I still could see how this roster, I guess, could work as far as how the pieces could fit. I think that it's too few consistent guys, too few guys, you know, people don't like the guy who just comes and gets 12 or 13 points every night. Like, that guy's not fun. He's not exciting. The guy who could blow up for 30 on any given night, like Ryan Anderson, you love having that on your team, and those nights he goes up for 30 are so much fun. But who's the 12 to 13 points per game I know that's what I'm going to get on this team? I just have no clue who that guy is, and it's because we don't have guys who can create easy shots for themselves. We don't have an ISO guy that, you know, just when stuff gets going tough, you isolate him and he gets to the rim or gets to the free throw line. It's just a bunch, you know, one or two of these high variance guys could be good, but I just feel like a record repeating myself. We have so many high variance guys, and maybe it wouldn't be such a bad thing to move one or two of them for a couple of guys who aren't fun, but we just know will get us 12 or 13 points every night.
Yeah, I remember there was an interview with Robert Parrish, and I don't know how many people remember Robert Parrish. They should, but he was the center for the Celtics back when they were amazing in the 80s.
He was a Charlotte Hornet as well.
And he was a Charlotte Hornet, that's true. He had like a 19-year career or something like that. He was in the league for a long time. But what people once asked him, like, did he mind that Kevin McHale and Dennis Johnson and, of course, Larry Bird got all of the fame and glory around that team? Because he, if you go look at his stats, he was usually like a 19-9 guy. Like this guy put up stats that we would kill for a player for our team. And he always just said, you know, I'm here to do all the dirty work. And the way I look at it, my job is every quarter to go out and make 2 baskets. And over the course of the game, I'm also supposed to get 5 free throws. And that's my job. And can you imagine having a guy who's out there and his job is just make 2 baskets every quarter, and he does it consistently for you?
So you're saying you want us to sign Robert Parrish?
That's right. We should go get the Chief. I don't know. He played until he was 41, I think. So he might still be able to score a basket a game?
Yeah, I mean, that would be, I love the nights Rhino goes off for 30. I love the nights where every time Eric Gordon catches it and puts it up, you know it's going in. But the price of high variance guys are games like this Utah game where you walk away and you say, how did we lose that game? Anthony Davis played like a monster, like an MVP, like a freaking man possessed. None of Utah's guys played that well. Gordon Hayward hit a couple lucky shots, whatever. But you just walk away and you go, how did we lose that game? Oh, yeah. Because our four other high-priced guys went 2 of 23 from the field. And it's just, you know, you start to just wish that Anthony Davis had, you know, he doesn't need much if he's playing at that level, or if you could get him to play at that level. He just needs a couple Robert Parrishes, you know, a couple. I even think, like, so what's the blueprint of this team? If we can't get a second guy, if we can't get a second banana, you know, that's of the level of a Russell Westbrook or a Kyrie Irving or a Draymond Green, whatever, we can't get that guy. That's going to be almost impossible to get now. That's fine. What would be the blueprint then? And then you would go the other way and say, okay, why don't you just make a Detroit Pistons 2004 team, but with Anthony Davis as a much, much, much better Rasheed Wallace? And then you start saying, yeah, but you knew Richard Hamilton was going to give you 16 points every night. You know, Chauncey Billups was going to step up. And, you know, even Tayshaun Prince, you would get a good 12, 14 points from him. I don't know who that guy is, or even the Minnesota team that Kevin Garnett got to the Western Conference Finals with. Like, Sam Cassell and Latrell Sprewell, who were past their prime at that point, they're better than any guards we have. Wouldn't you agree?
I'll wait till Tyreke Evans comes back.
Oh, see, this is the thing that cracks me up, is there's always all this hope put on the people that aren't here. The guy who's not here is all of a sudden great. Like, if Tyreke was here this whole time and, I don't know, Eric Gordon wasn't, man, the things we would be saying about how good Eric Gordon is and how much better he's going to make us. Like, the Pearson who's not here is always the greatest player of all time. But I think Tyreke Evans, you know, he was fine last year, but he's still a guy who misses a ton of shots, isn't a high, you know, points per shot.
Yeah, but he checks multiple boxes. He'll get you some rebounds and some assists and score. He's the only guy on this team who actually checks multiple boxes other than Anthony Davis.
Yeah, I guess I'm to the point where I'm like, you know, okay, yeah, this guy is good and yada, 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 but I don't care who you would, you know, if you would take away the same level of guys from Golden State or even Cleveland, who has been without Kyrie Irving, like, championship teams are not going, what are we now, 4-13?
Yeah.
We're not a championship level. You can't just say, you know, these guys come back and all of a sudden everything's fixed. And then even if you do say that, how scary is that this team is just teetering on needing full health just to be a very good team. So I don't know. I'm not expecting these guys to come back and be saviors. It will definitely be better than we are, but there's problems on this team, both presently and with how they're constructed for the future, with that. So,
all right, let's move on from your depressing prediction, and let's do different types of predictions. So, three games coming up this week.
All right.
We have Tuesday at home versus Memphis, away in Houston on Wednesday for a back-to-back, and then Friday at home versus Cleveland on ESPN.
Ooh.
And actually the game against Houston is also on NBA TV, so lots of chances for people to watch this team suck. So the question is, which of these three teams would you like to speak about?
I mean, Houston is absolutely fascinating to me. Just
okay. So, second night of back-to-back, we're in Houston, and what is their record now? Like 6-9 or something like that?
it really depends. As we're taping this podcast, they're 6-10 and heading to overtime with the Knicks.
Okay.
So they actually had a little bit of a comeback. They're actually starting Patrick Beverley again. Ty Lawson isn't playing, so they're kind of back to the team that they were, except for they don't have Monte Yunus. They're starting Clint Capella, who's playing better basketball than Dwight Howard on a lot of nights.
Yeah.
So
it took them 50 points from Harden to beat the 76ers.
By two, yeah. Yeah, I mean...
Sorry.
So that's the thing with me is, all right, who are we going to put on Harden that night, especially if it's the second night of a back-to-back and Drew's not there? Who gets that assignment? I don't even know the answer to it. I'm just asking it.
Is Smith.
Oh, God.
Why not? He's our savior.
Yeah, I mean, they're just... Their 6-10 should be more disappointing than the Pelicans' 4-13 just because...
Yeah.
They've had a couple of, like I said, Monte Yunus was hurt, but they shouldn't be reeling the way they are. They just Harden came in out of shape, not playing as well as last year, and then Dwight Howard you said as a possible trade candidate. I don't know. I don't know. I would bet that he's not on the team in February of 2017.
Okay.
I could easily see him gone earlier than that. But, I mean, they're just an interesting team to me because I don't think that last year was a fluke, and I don't think that Josh Smith was, that big of a factor. Maybe drafting
there for
Sam,
a month or two, right?
Yeah, maybe drafting Sam Decker ruined everything. Is that?
Probably.
He was the virus. But, I mean, again.
Montrezl Harrell, is that how you say that? He's got to be the problem.
I mean, last year everybody thought of their offense, but they were really a defensive team. They were fantastic defensively last year. This year they're horrid. They can't rebound the ball. They're not stopping people. I don't know what has happened on that end. You can't just say, oh, James Harden wasn't great last year. But something's happened there with that team on the defensive end. They're playing Marcus Thornton more. I'm sure, that can't help. But, it's defensively they're giving up a good amount of threes. People are hitting them at a high rate. And then they can't control the defensive glass when teams do miss. So they're getting into these scoring contests with everybody. And James Harden is out of shape and not the guy he was last year. So there they are at 6-10, possibly 6-11, and it looks like we'll get another Western Conference team on the road not playing their best ball.
Yeah. So you brought up Marcus Thornton. I just need to put this out there because I think this is maybe the funniest stat I've ever seen. Marcus Thornton has played 14 games for this team. He's averaging 24 minutes a game. I want you to guess how many free throws he's taken this season. Taken. Total free throws. Just make a guess.
So how many minutes has he played total?
14 games, 24 minutes a game.
240, so around 300, a little over 300. I'm going to go one every 25 minutes, so I'm going to say 12.
He has taken two free throws.
Oh, my God.
Two free throws. And he's missed both of them. Just to make sure. How do you play 24 minutes in a game, for two games and not get two free throws? Like, he hasn't been fouled while shooting more than once the entire season.
Well, that's crazy. Then he doubled his season tonight because he's 2-for-2 from the line tonight.
Look at him go.
He's on fire.
So, the funniest part about this team is, on our team right now, and we're not fielding a team that's shooting particularly well or efficiently outside of Anthony Davis, we have two players who are averaging less than 1 point per shot. That's Alonzo G and our good buddy Ish Smith. the Rockets have Thornton, who's well under at 0.96. Ty Lawson, who's at 0.95, who used to be one of the more efficient guards in the league. Corey Brewer is at 0.89. He's shooting 29% from the field and 22% from three. And Patrick Beverley is at 0.89. And KJ McDaniels, who hasn't played very much, but he's at 0.69. Like, I've never seen a team with that many people that terrible. I'm floored.
Yeah, and, you know, the defense isn't helping. So, I mean, you said you made a slight joke about it a little earlier, but what would be the most you would give up? These two teams have shown that they're not afraid to trade with each other in division. What would you give up if Dwight Howard was on the market? What's the most you would give up?
A Sheik and a protected pick.
So, okay.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Dwight Howard has some serious physical issues now, and he's a douchebag. But I still think he can really help a team. So, I mean, I would give up the protected pick, and probably I wouldn't be any problem with protecting it like the last one we had. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't think a Sheik and a protected pick could get you.
I don't think so either. I think that's one of the Rockets' major issues too. Is Daryl Morey milks every trade he gets, and if he's not going to get back more than he thinks he's trading out, according to all spreadsheets, he doesn't make those trades. And there's no way anyone is going to be able. Like, he's going to still look at Dwight Howard and say the guy's got a 20 PER. We're going to be able to play on this many games. He's worth a good amount, but nobody's going to offer a lot for Dwight Howard. So, I don't think that the Rockets are necessarily going to be an easy trade partner.
Yeah, I'm curious. I mean, couldn't you see if you make that trade that Dwight Howard comes here and doesn't play also?
Maybe, yeah. I don't know if I would. I think he would get minutes.
Yeah.
Because he's just so much better as a pick and roll finisher than Omer Asik on his best day.
Oh,
I think you handle it for that. So actually, a more interesting trade target. What would you do? What would you give up to see if we could get Trevor Ariza to come over here? He's shooting very poorly this year, and we know that Daryl Morey has already traded him once because he didn't think he was part of like the core. So Ariza is definitely a gettable piece. What would you give up to get Ariza to come to the Pelicans?
Yeah, I don't think anything that's even because I think Quincy is here and he has that spot. So either I would trade something that doesn't include Quincy and then just have two guys that I have to give minutes to but can't give either probably as many as they'd want, so that would be an issue, or I would make Quincy part of the package, and if I'm doing that, I'd rather just keep Quincy at, you know, $5-6 million left to, you know, less per year than Ariza's making, younger, et cetera, and just, you know, have a similar type of player. So I really wouldn't have any interest unless, you know, we still never hear anything about Pondexter's injury, but let's say, you know, they have to go in for another surgery and he's out for the year, then I'd be interested. But with Quincy coming back, I wouldn't have a need for both of them on the same team, and if I could just choose one when you consider contract, you know, intangibles and age, I would pick Quincy over Trevor.
Okay. I was just wondering.
Yeah, nobody on this team. How about you? We've got two other games, Cleveland, Memphis. Which of those two interests you more?
Honestly, Memphis interests me a little bit more than Cleveland, more because Cleveland isn't even the team it's going to be, but everybody hears all kinds of stuff about Cleveland. They're rolling through the Eastern Conference. They're not having a whole lot of trouble. They have had an easy schedule, but they're not really that different from what we saw last year. The Memphis Grizzlies, however, are very radically different so far this season from what they were last year. And I don't think I've actually seen this sort of thing happen before. they have slipped dramatically on the defensive end. And when I say dramatically, I mean I think they were the third best team in the league last year on the defensive end. They are bottom 10 right now. Bottom 10 in the league defensively. And they've actually juiced up their offense usually, and they haven't brought in anybody really different on their offense. This is the same team, and it's still Courtney Lee in the backcourt with Mike Conley. And Matt Barnes is not a huge offensive player. I don't know how to explain how they suddenly have a pretty solid offense to go with their defense that slipped so dramatically. So they're 9-8. They are, again, like last year, winning more games than they should with their point differential. But I'm interested to see what's happening with this team. Do you think that this is the new Memphis Grizzlies, that they're pretty much going to have to try to outscore people because they can't hold people defensively anymore?
For their sake, I hope not. I don't think they're going to be the dominant defensive team that they were. I don't know how they're going to have enough shooting to outscore people. I mean, I guess adding Mario Chalmers, they're hoping that gives them a little bit of life. We saw when he first came over there, he had some big games. It seems like players get really excited to prove their old teams wrong, and they come out and have that stretch, but eventually come back down to earth. I don't know where they would get the scoring from to consistently be able to do that and win enough games to be somewhat of a threat. I just think that this is a team that's teetering, and they're one injury away from just absolutely collapsing. I mean, they've been a pretty average team. I mean, when you look at point differential, below average team so far this season without any real injuries. I just think that their best case scenario is they have little to no injuries and win 46 games, but the much more likely scenario is that eventually a Conley or a Gasol or even a Zebo goes down, and they're so close to tipping over that edge that if and when that happens, especially if it's for a long period of time, you know, they're just going to sink. I think they're in a similar boat as the Utah Jazz, and whichever one of those has the most injuries this year will be the one that sinks. And I still see a scenario that's possible in which Memphis doesn't make the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah, and so you mentioned Zebo. If you look at just like his raw numbers compared to what he did last year, like they don't look that different. Like just points and rebounds, his numbers look pretty similar. But Zebo has never been an all-star defender, but in Memphis, his defensive ratings have always been well below league average just because he works so well with the team that they have there and what he's supposed to do and how he cleans the boards for them. His defensive rating has crept up to a 106, which the Pelicans probably would take in a heartbeat because 106 is pretty good for them. But for them, their starters are all like now 106s and 107s and 108s. It's not like their bench is coming in and the team is falling apart. Their starters themselves are murdering them defensively. So, and it's players like Mario Chalmers and Brandon Wright who come in, and Tony Allen who starts some games and doesn't start others. They're the ones who are actually having big impacts on the defensive rating, and the rest of the starters are terrible. Like Mike Conley has a 109. And I've always thought he was a really good defender.
Yeah, they're teetering, and there's really nothing they could say. It's not like they've brought in a new system or a ton of new players. It's just, I mean, I know you've joked and called me a Memphis hater. I just have felt for the last couple of years that they were just so close to this edge, and they won a bunch of close games that could have gone either way. And in any given year, they were a team that was anywhere between 42 and 50 wins, and I just felt like a lot of the breaks went their way and that eventually that wasn't going to happen. I still think that this is this team is an injury or two away from being a lottery team. One trade that was rumored to be talked about last year, both guys on the last year of their deal. Would you have any interest in some kind of trade that centered around Eric Gordon and Jeff Green if, let's say, Tyree came back, assumed the starting shooting guard role, played well with Drew? Would that be something that interests you at all?
I don't like Jeff Green. So I have a really hard time getting behind anything that involves Jeff Green. And I know, like, there's ideas that we're balancing the roster a little bit better there. Maybe he's going to be better at defending bigger wings. He is one of those classic guys who is just a little bit worse than average at everything he does. So he's like, the idea of him when he was coming out of college was that, hey, he's a great all-around guy. He's good at everything, and he's going to be like he's going to be the guy who checks all the little boxes and helps your team. And what Jeff Green has actually turned out to be is he's a little bit worse at league average at everything he does for his position. So actually, he kind of unchecks all of the boxes across the board. So leave me with Eric Gordon and the off chance that he might hit 8 threes in a game rather than Jeff Green. I guess. And then I think about that, and then I'm like, Eric Gordon also, he's not a little below average in a lot of the other fields. He sucks with everything in some of those fields. So I don't know. Both those players are flawed, but I don't want Jeff Green. No Jeff Green. Screw Jeff Green.
Oh.
I almost talked myself into Jeff Green for a moment there.
I know. It's sad. But, I mean, these are, when people talk about fixing the Pelicans and want to make their trades, of course they always propose the trades in which we destroy the other team and give away our trash for something good. It's more likely that those are the type of trades that Dell is sitting there pondering. Do I want to give Eric Gordon for, you know, Jeff Green? And the answer is, I don't know. It's not going to matter. Life is pointless.
Let's just look him up. So before we move on, got to ask the question. Got to do it for every game that we talk about. Who is the one guy on this team? Because Bino's gone, right? He went off to Miami. Or is it Benno? Whatever. who is the guy who you think could just come in and suddenly blow this team apart out of nowhere?
Matt Barnes?
Really?
I could see him getting some open
corner. Matt Barnes?
Get some open corner threes, and all of a sudden, you know, you look up and he's got 14 points halfway through the first half. Yeah, that's who I'll go with. As unlikely as it is, I'm going to say that.
I figured you were taking Russ Smith.
Oh, no, he won't get the minutes or looks, or he doesn't have the type of game. But, yeah, Matt Barnes right now shooting 29% from three. You can guarantee that he's going to catch some fire. Him, or actually, I'll switch my answer. I know who it's going to be.
To Michael Green?
Yep.
Yeah.
No doubt.
That was my pick.
No doubt in my mind.
He started two games this season. He's shooting 60% from three on only 10 shots. But 60% from three, it's very scary. He's just going to come in and people are going to go, he's going to, you know, score a quick 12 points and people are going to go, who the hell is that? And be pissed off that some schmuck is again coming in and destroying the Pelicans.
Yep. So for those of you who play DraftKings, go ahead. I'm sure Jermichael Green's like $3,000 minimum on Jeff Green Kings. Go ahead and pick him up for that night.
Yeah. Okay. What's your prediction for the week?
I'm going to stick with we win home games and lose road games, so I'm going 2-1.
I am going 3-0.
Ryan, at the end of almost every podcast, you're like, this is going to be the last time I'm optimistic. And then
Back. Yeah, I'm sorry. I can't help myself. It's good. See, when Tyreek Evans comes back and the team still sucks, then I'll start being pessimistic.
All right.
And have we heard anything? Like, Tyreek Evans was supposed to come back last week. Why isn't he here? Why isn't he playing? You never know anything. It makes me sad.
Yeah, he was supposed to play and then had a little bit of pain in his knee after one shoot around and out for another week. It doesn't inspire much hope that when we get these guys back, they're going to stay back, or when we get these guys back, somebody else isn't going to get hurt, so. I would say if the top eight, so let's say we have a top eight players on our team, am I right? So we got the finishing five, a Sheik.
Can't believe you still call them that.
Well, I just don't want to call them all out, but the Pondexter, right? Am I missing anybody?
Those are actually, like, you went out when you're saying that, so say them again. Sorry.
So the finishing five, a Sheik, Cole, and Pondexter, at least coming into the season, those were the eight definite rotation guys, right? I'm not missing anybody, okay.
You could maybe put a Jensen there, but yeah, that's right.
But let's say those eight, over under 15 games in which we have at least seven of those eight guys.
Under.
That's insane.
That's true. I mean, you know it. You know that's going to happen.
So, like, why do we keep talking about what this team will look like when they're healthy? It's like saying what a unicorn's going to look like with, you know, different paint. I don't know. You know, different
paint.
Oh,
I didn't know we painted unicorns. Okay.
Well, exactly, because you've never seen one with different paint. So, yeah, I'm gonna keep it really simple, which is a good thing because we got four of our next five at home. I'm just gonna say this team keeps playing with energy, effort, hustle, intensity, makes their shots at home. They win home games. I don't care who the opponent is. And then they lose road games again. I don't care who the opponent is. It's just how it's going to be.
Okay.
All right. So before we go, a quick game of rap lyric or Shakespeare.
Okay.
So
come on.
We'll just go really quick. We'll go through a couple of these. You tell me if it's a hip-hop rap lyric or Shakespeare. Let's start with, I wonder why we take from our women.
I wonder, I would say that is Shakespeare.
That is hip-hop from Tupac. Keep your head up. When I'm sick of this life I see, it has to be my family who lifts me.
Oh, that's got to be hip-hop.
That is hip-hop.
Okay.
All right. I set it down that one may smile and be a villain.
Oh, that's Shakespeare.
Do you know what it's from?
Oh, no. Hamlet?
You're correct.
Yeah, I thought that might be it.
Then I hope this takes away from my sins.
I'm going to say that's hip-hop.
It is. Kanye West, Jesus Walks.
You're
doing well here.
Yeah, I finally get to do one. Okay, and okay, go ahead.
What's here? The portrait of a blinking idiot?
Oh, that's got to be Shakespeare.
You're doing really well at this game.
You thought you were going to catch me, but I know a little bit of Shakespeare. I was about to say I know my Shakespeare pretty well, but I'm sure there are people listening to this podcast who would blow me away in Shakespeare knowledge, so I should just shut up about it.
All right, calm down. Yeah, there's some that are very obvious Shakespeare. I never wish to be the burden bearer, but souls need saving.
I'm gonna go with hip hop.
Correct. Big crit. Look around this manor and all you will see is ill mannered people.
That's Shakespeare.
No, this is Plan B.
Really?
Yes, I finally got you. Yeah, Plan.
Gah.
Yes, he used manor as an ironic name for British council estates.
Okay.
Oh, count myself a king of infinite space. Count myself a king of infinite space.
That's an interesting. I'll say that is hip hop.
That is Shakespeare from Hamlet.
Really. Oh, I'm falling apart. I'm like us after a three-game win streak.
I didn't cry because my anger wouldn't let me feel for a stranger.
Hip-hop.
Correct, that was Tupac again. And then this will be our final. From the other side, what you see, : a bunch of nonsense. From the other side, what you see, a bunch of nonsense.
I'm going hip-hop.
That is. It is Lupe Fiasco. So you did very well.
I finally won one.
This is.
Did I win one?
You did. You did.
Okay. Hey, look at me.
Very proud of it. So we definitely, you definitely can tell the difference for the most part between hip-hop and Shakespeare, although.
Yeah, I just can't tell between company mottos and hip-hop.
That's all right. You'll get there. All right. Nicely done.
And, but the funny part is I actually had convinced myself last week that I had won that one. Man, I just like this whole thing with the team and me being optimistic. I can convince myself it's going to happen.
Sometimes when you can't win, you got to cheat. So all right, so we're both predicting a winning week. Ironically, we talked about it a little on this podcast. Houston did win because of Marcus Thornton and Trevor Ariza were so. Our negative feedback worked with them. We reverse jinxed Houston into a win.
Awesome. So, and because I predicted complete wins across the week, we're going to have all losses. So, everybody look forward to that, and thanks for listening to In the Know.